Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
I'm bringing Hassel back.
Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. And joining us now is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, Daniel Jeremiah's report on the Move the Sticks podcast has sent this city into a tailspin. He said that the Titans are exploring potentially trading up to the third overall pick. One, how do you think realistic that is? And two, how smart do you think that would be if Rand Carthon made that decision to move up from 11 to 3?
I saw what Daniel Jeremiah said. And first, let me say, I like him a lot. I think he does a very good job. I saw that and I thought, oh, wow, here we go. This is going to get some people going. I just don't see it happening. It's a long way to go, from 11 all the way to 3. And so what you would have to give up to do that, especially considering so many people feel like, the quarterbacks that potentially are going, what many believe in the top five, top 10, but maybe even as high as, the top 7. I think what you would have to give up to move that far is so significant. And then the other thing I would say is this. I think you get outside the top 2 prospects, I think you then get into this conversation about Levis and Richardson. I think, and I've said this to you guys before as well, barring the ACL injury, I don't know how much better of a prospect you should feel like those players are over Hendon Hooker. It just seems like a lot to go up and get somebody who, I guess, would be the third best quarterback in this draft.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. What is your take on Will Levis? Very mixed reviews on him. Draft stock rising, draft stock falling. What do you make of Will Levis, and what have you heard about him around the league?
Yeah, so here's what I think about Levis. I think that he has certain traits that you absolutely love your quarterback to have. So he obviously has a remarkable arm, and it's special, And so that alone is going to kind of put him in a class that's different than other quarterbacks. And then I think the other thing that you have to, consider with him is that he is a tough, gritty, competitive guy who is a probably better athlete than has been talked about in this draft process. And those are traits that teams typically rally around and like. So there's all of that. But then there's also times when you would watch him where you say, man, for a guy that has played as much football as he's played, I think he's got 38 college starts, for a guy that's played as much football as he's played, that seems like a head-scratching decision. Like, why would he do that? And so I think in the evaluation of Levis, the ability to sit down with him and try to figure out, okay, why did you do that here, I think will clear up a lot for teams, or kind of make them feel like, I don't know how ready he is to come in and play right away.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, if we just talked about these quarterbacks, the three quarterbacks, not Hendon Hooker, but Will Levis, Shroud, and Bryce Young. However those two guys go, Bryce Young and Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, it's yet to be determined. We figure both of them are being a top two picks. But if you're looking at a guy like Hendon Hooker, if he doesn't get injured, where do you think he falls in his quarterback mix? Do you think he's closer to a C.J. Stroud and a Bryce Young, or more so in the line of Anthony Richardson or Will Levis?
Yeah, I think that Stroud and Young are kind of in a class of their own when you're looking at this year's draft class. Like, I think those guys are clearly the top two guys. Then I think that there's some separation with the next group of quarterbacks. And look, I asked the question, you know, months ago about, well, wait a second, why do we seem to be saying, all right, there's these top two, then there's this next two, meaning Richardson and Levis, and then, oh, by the way, hey, check out in the second round, maybe, hey, you'll see Hendon Hooker. And that just didn't, I think I said this to you guys, called a bunch of Hendon Hooker's games when he was at Virginia Tech, then obviously followed what he did at Tennessee. I feel like I know, you know, in some ways more about him than I know about some other prospects who I don't see in college as they're getting ready to come out in the draft. So to answer your question directly, I think if he did not have the ACL injury, I think that he would be in that next group of quarterbacks, which he kind of is anyway, but I think that people would view him as the most ready out of the next three. Because one thing about Hooker that I think is, you know, probably underappreciated is that he's really good with the ball in terms of protecting the football. And if there's something that you can say about Levis, it's, you know, it didn't always take care of the football. If there's something you can say about Richardson is, and only 13 starts, there's kind of too much evidence of not protecting the football. So I think Hooker, in many accounts, would be viewed as the best of those three.
Now, looking at this draft, minus the quarterbacks, who do you think is the best player in this draft? Is it a Jalen Carter? Is it a Will Allen Jr.? Is it, you know, Paris Johnson, the big tackle? Who do you believe is the number one guy in this year's draft?
Yeah, I will say this. I don't, you know, because of my role, don't get into like, hey, I'm studying every defensive end and every defensive tackle. But Will Anderson, when you watched Alabama play, I mean, it just looked like he was ready to play in the NFL years ago. And Dimas, you know this. Like, you look at some guys when they come in, and it's at any position where you look at him and you're like, yep, okay. Like, he looks the part. He walks in. Like, he's already as strong as, you know, kind of the guys that are at the top of his position. You know, he's already, you know, doing things that other players need to develop and be able to do. And it just... like, he has that feel to me.
Now, if the Titans, that number three pick is still there, Tim, and say, you know, Stroud and Bryce Young are gone, and the Titans do indeed move up to that number three pick, not to say that they are, but I'm saying if they, in the perfect world, they move up to that number three pick, and they draft a Anthony Richardson, do you think Malik Willis's days here are numbered?
Yes. Here's what I would say is that, look, at that point, if a quarterback gets drafted that high, and really if a quarterback gets drafted in the top 10, you know, in some ways it really won't be all that different than when my brother was the quarterback for the Titans. Jake Locker was drafted inside the top 10, and, you know, after one season at the longest, he's going to be the starting quarterback. And so when that happens, look, your path to the field totally changes. And because at that point, you know, that quarterback is going to get pretty much every snap that he can get. So, yeah, I think at that point, you just, the dynamic of that quarterback room shifts to, all right, we are doing everything in our power to get this player, and the example you gave, Anthony Richardson, to play as well as he can possibly play. And I think having a young developmental prospect as somebody behind him probably doesn't allow for that to happen.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays and hey, Predators fans, don't miss tomorrow night's Smashville live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock. You can see your Predators star players up close and personal and get some autographs and pictures. Preds player guests tomorrow night are Mark Jankowski and Philip Tomasino. Smashville Live is brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, Superbook Sports, and Dulce Vita Tequila, pure and simple. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025, 1063, the game. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025, 1063, the game. We're out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern ahead of the Predators matchup with the Vegas Golden Knights. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now.
Tim, I want to ask you, you know, we've talked a lot about the age of these quarterbacks when you're evaluating them. And I know as a minor league baseball player, if I had the stats that I had at my 2 years as a minor league player when I was 18 or 19 coming out of high school, I probably would have gotten another year or two to see if it would have worked itself out. But as a guy who played 4 years of college, I didn't get it done early, and so they were like, we're moving on. We're going to get the next guy in here, right? So I'm curious how that works when you're looking at you just had a really interesting observation when you're looking at Levis or somebody like that saying, okay, he shouldn't be making this mistake at this stage of his college career. So when you're looking at Richardson, it's kind of a double-edged sword because he can't go to the minor leagues, right, to work things out.
Correct. Mm-hmm. No, but he could stay in college longer. And I think that, you know, because his physical ability – the, you know, temptation of saying, hey, look, I'm going to come out because people are going to fall in love with that and I'm probably going to get drafted, you end up doing that. And so while that might be the right move in the short term, I think that you could look at somebody like Trey Lance and say, well, it might not be the best thing in the long term. And I know Lance probably isn't a perfect example because injuries have been the primary reason for things not working out quickly for him. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think, something that you have to weigh is, look, I may go in the top 10 because I'm physically superior than most prospects, but am I going to be ready to play? Like, I would make the argument that Trey Lance was not ready to play. One, he hadn't started very long. COVID was part of his college story. That was an issue. I think you could say a similar thing for someone like Mark Sanchez. You could say a similar thing for someone like Sam Darnold. And so I think there's that element of, look, you are strictly drafting on potential with some of these young prospects that are really physically talented but don't have a lot of snaps under their belts. You know, on the flip side of it, just for full disclosure, you know, I was relatively critical of Kenny Pickett coming out because I was looking at Kenny Pickett saying, look, he's older than all of the quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round the year prior to him coming out. Like, he should dominate college football. He's basically been a pro football player in college football the last two seasons. And so, you know, I think you have to have that type of context, which I think is the example you're given with, you know, minor league baseball. And so I think that's one of the reasons why evaluating the quarterback position, exactly what you're talking about in terms of experience and potential, in terms of physical ability, the fact that quarterbacks don't all have to be 6'4", they don't all have to have the strongest arm. And so I think there's just all of these characteristics that could fit, you know, in a different box. It runs the gamut. And because of that, I think that's why so many people get the quarterback position wrong.
Well, let's use an example of a lot of these things we're discussing. You, I'm sure, did a heavy evaluation of Malik Willis last year. Here we are a year later. Mm-hmm. And we're talking a lot about what the Titans might be looking for here, but what do you see is next for Malik Willis? Like, what do you do if you're the Titans? Where do you try to reserve a spot for him, knowing how many teams like to keep only two quarterbacks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, my evaluation of Malik Willis was this. He was an A-plus runner. Like, he was, I think the statistic was he broke more tackles his last year of college football than any other player. And so just to put that in perspective, that includes Kenneth Walker, who had a great year for the Seahawks. That includes Breece Hall, who had that great year for the Jets before he tore his ACL. Malik Willis had broken more tackles than either one of those players in college football that last year that they were playing. And so he was an A-plus runner. And as a thrower,
look, he had the ability to make all the throws, but he really wasn't a developed passer. And, like, that was the story on him coming out. Now, he was forced to play early because of injury, and it basically showed he had a long way to go. So where do you go from here? You try to see if he can develop as a passer. I mean, that's because the physical ability is first-round ability as a runner and as, you know, in terms of arm strength. But in terms of seeing the passing game, he's behind. And so you do whatever you can to try to get him to come along. And unfortunately, because he fell to the, you know, outside, well outside the first round and into the third round, you then are in a situation where they could reset and draft another quarterback that high or higher the following year.
I'm curious your thoughts on where it goes from here with Lamar Jackson. We know, you know, over time you could feel differently about things a month, 2 months from now, all of these things. Is there a person, what would be your strategy if you're the Ravens to try to mend the fence? If your goal at the end is to have Lamar Jackson playing for you, and I think it has been all along, mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but
no,
is there a person who could be sort of the peacemaker to say, hey, Lamar, this is just business. We love you. We want you. Let's work this out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably is a combination of the owner, Steve Bisciotti, and John Harbaugh. And I think, you know, you basically say, look, here's the thing. We drafted you in the first round for a reason. We've always believed in you. When people said that, you know, he's not a quarterback, we said, no, he is a quarterback. We're taking him in the first round. And so, and we've built this around you. Like, we have a 300-pound fullback for a reason, because of your style of play. And look, we've tried at receiver, and we've gotten it wrong sometimes. So we're going to continue to try to get receiver right. But, you know, we also were not going to go off of Deshaun Watson's contract. It was such an outlier. It doesn't make any sense. If you want a fully guaranteed contract, look, we'll sign you to a fully guaranteed contract, but it's not going to be for more money fully guaranteed than some of these other players. And so I think you go that route. And then, look, at some point it comes back to Lamar Jackson to say, look, I'm costing myself money. Yes, I'm a football player, but I also need to be a businessman. And, you know, people are starting to put the stuff out there now of, you know, Josh Allen, who's that same draft class, you know, since signing that extension that Josh Allen signed, which is the exact same time that Lamar could have signed an extension, Josh Allen has made tens of millions of dollars more than Lamar Jackson. And he'll never get that money back. And so, you know, at some point, the principle is great, but this is also how he makes his living.
With that being said, Tim, do you think sometimes these players, in the world that we live in, that everything is so accessible and we see everything and we think we know everything about everyone's contract, that they're looking at other leagues, not even necessarily their league, they're looking at other leagues and they're screaming, well, they're getting guaranteed money, so why can't I get guaranteed money? Do you think too many guys are doing that in regards to football? Because whether you like it or not, owners are not giving long-term guaranteed money. They will give you a short-term guaranteed money, but when you're talking the money that Lamar wants or these quarterbacks are getting now, they're not guaranteeing 5 years, you know, $250 mm-hmm. million or $300 million. They're just not doing it, regardless of what other leagues are doing.
Yeah, and D-Mace, I think you're exactly right. And that's like me saying, like, well, shoot, D-Mace just sold his house in that neighborhood for that much money, me too. And they're like, no, I mean, you don't live in his neighborhood. His neighborhood, like, that's what they're doing when they're looking at these other sports. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not, it's like, no, it doesn't. It's not a comp that makes sense. And see, that's where I think you start to get into, you know, guys that, like Lamar is doing, is representing himself. And I'm not saying Lamar Jackson is not a smart guy. You know, I think he's proved that he is smart. But I also think that it's important to be around people that are experts in doing what they do, and which is why people use agents. And no one likes writing that check to an agent for his commission. But at the same time, their job exists for a reason. And many of them do a good job for a reason. They know the market. They know other contracts. In some cases, they've negotiated with the people you're negotiating with and negotiated big contracts with them. And so there is value there. And, you know, you can argue about, you know, what percentage an agent should be paid, but I don't think you can argue the fact that there's value in having an agent who knows the market, who knows how to negotiate, who's negotiated with the people that you're trying to negotiate in terms of getting a...
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, what do you make of Jalen Carter saying he is only going to meet with teams with a top 10 pick?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably knows that he's not going to fall outside the top 10. And because of, you know, maybe some of the things that, you know, I guess we would just call them off the field concerns about, you know, what he was involved with and answering those questions rather than letting that run like wildfire. I think, you know, meeting with the teams that he feels like he needs to meet with and explaining, you know, his situation and involvement in that stuff to them directly is probably what he and truthfully probably his agent and maybe advice that he's getting from Alabama as well, from Georgia as well, like that, that's what he needs to do. And look, I think in some cases, it's kind of one of those scenarios where, and I know D-Mace had heard this, like, you know, be who you can afford to be. And I think that's pretty much what he's doing.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Appreciate you for joining us. As always, we will chat with you next week.
Yeah, see you guys.
All right, thanks, Tim. Coming up next, the Predators are in action tonight, taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. Rough loss 5-1 in Dallas last night, but a quick turnaround. And what some of the national writers have to say about the Nashville Predators from now until the end of the season. And do we really think it's realistic? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
How do you, like, what lessons do you take from this one when you've got to go face Vegas on tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, we know our recipe to win. I think one, it starts with our penalty discipline. Two, our special teams have to be better, and then I think we've got to execute. You know, we had some good looks, I thought, early in the game to keep it. You know, and a lot of times when you can score early in the game, it helps your team get momentum, particularly if, you know, the other team scores first. To get one back, I think, helps. So just take some lessons out of that. And I think the other big part of it is not to beat ourselves where we have opportunities to put pucks behind their D to get in the offensive zone and not give a team, you know, opportunities to be able to come back at you and half ice the game from your lack of puck play.
There you go. That was Preds head coach John Hines after the game last night. Preds fall to the Dallas Stars 5-1 on the road, but a quick turnaround tonight hosting the Vegas Golden Knights. We're out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. So I was looking at ESPN.com, and Tim Kavanaugh wrote that tonight is a must-win game for the Predators. And I have a little bit of a problem with that for a couple of reasons. Must win to make the playoffs. Fine. Okay, if you want to look at it like that, that the Predators are, that you absolutely positively have to win this game to make the playoffs, fine. But MoneyPuck.com gives the Predators a 1.5% chance to even make the playoffs. So I think we kind of throw this term must win game around just a little bit too much. This isn't, you know, the Predators are right on the brink and it all comes down to tonight. No, it's a long shot anyways. So I don't agree with labeling it a must win game just because it seems like too much of a long shot at this point.
I've never really liked the must win thing because really every game is must win when you get down to it. It's not like, oh, this game doesn't matter. But I do think now, I think Kavanaugh's point, I'm looking at his article. First of all, why is he writing this article? Tonight's game is being televised where? On ESPN.
Yes.
So he's trying to create some drama, create a storyline. There's no question that if the Predators are going to pull a miracle here, and that's what we're looking at right now, realistically, they probably cannot lose more than one more game when you get down to it, right? Mm-hmm. They've got six games left. Mm-hmm. Realistically, winning five out of six would give them a shot, right? Because you got head-to-head with Winnipeg and Calgary. Calgary, to their credit, has righted the ship a little bit, and they're in this mix too. So you got to pass two teams if you're the Predators. But really, the issue is the manpower right now.
Right.
That's what they're up against. Last night was an example. I thought they fought very hard, and they were sort of weaving their web at how they've hung in there against the top teams. How did they hang in there against Boston? They hung in there, stayed scoreless. UC Soros made saves. They played hard. They come up with a goal to take the lead. Last night, they gave up an early goal, but they're still hanging around. Second period, they're down 1-0. And in the first 10 minutes, they got a power play. They had some great looks. They had three shots on goal, and they had a great cross-ice pass to Cody Glass, who's got an open net, and he hits the crossbar. If that goes in, it's 1-1. You're like, hey, got life here. But then about halfway through the second period, Dallas, you know, they found their game a little bit more. I think Dallas, you know, you look at the – if you're scouting the Predators and you're Dallas, at the beginning of the year, you're like, well, they used to have Matthias Ekholm and all these guys. Roman Josi. Where's Roman Josi? Oh, he's hurt? Like, how could you not mentally a little bit say, who are these guys? Right? We're going to kill these guys. We're just going to roll out here. We should take these guys. No problem.
Never heard of these
people.
And
then this team is scrapping and hanging around halfway through the game. And so either you fall into the trap if you're the Stars and you underestimate for the 60 minutes, or you say, hey, look, we got to pick it up. These guys are out scrapping us. These guys are hanging in here. We're better than these guys. And that's kind of what happened. They flexed, and Nashville just didn't have answers. And credit the Stars. You know, they had a good crowd last night. They had a chance to clinch a playoff berth. They're still playing for something, right? They're trying to play for a division championship, and they were just the better team. And they should be the better team at this point. The Predators, half of their lineup, I'm not talking about just playing five or six games for Milwaukee. About half of their lineup has played a ton of games for Milwaukee this year. So it's just a tall order right now for the Preds.
Well, I mean, it's – one, they lack the manpower that is going to take to beat a Dallas Stars team who is still playing – for position in the playoffs. So they come out with a different type of energy than possibly the Nashville Predators. Not to say that they don't come out with the energy to win a hockey game, but Dallas looks at it from one end, from one perspective, and the Preds look at it from another perspective. Now, as far as, you know, a must win, if this was the same team that we saw prior to the trade deadline, then I would say, yeah. This
you
is
gotta
must
win that game.
This is a must. These are must wins moving forward. But this isn't. This is a team since March 4th. They've won eight games, lost nine. So they're basically right around a 500 team. This is a team that after the trade deadline, I don't think many people thought that they would get eight wins. They thought that, okay, here we go. It's a rebuild, so we're gonna give them some grace. As long as they go out and be competitive, show that fire, then we're okay. But this team came out and they did just that, but they were winning games. So you can't look at them now and say, okay, since they are in a position to potentially make a playoff game, that every game from here on out is a must win. That's unfair to these young guys. They're out here just playing. Do they want to go to the playoffs? Absolutely they want to go to the playoffs. But the likelihood of them making the playoffs is very slim. You know, even if they win five out of the next six, they still will end up with 13 wins in that span, and is that good enough to get them into the playoffs?
Yeah, and I think, too, again, the thing that is the most significant about what they're doing night in and night out right now. Last night was an example. You have in the top six positions, right, at forward, Novak, Evangelista, Tomasino, Glass, guys that you're really looking at and saying, these are our prospects. How do we look in the next few years? So Dallas last night sees these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to scare them off the bat, but they've been productive, right? But after a while, it's like, okay, look, we got to shut down Novak. We got to shut down Glass. Evangelista's been causing trouble for other teams. What do we do? They're getting their attention, right? That's to their credit. But now they got to figure out when they're getting attention, they're not sneaking up on guys, can they still find ways to make plays? And not just the night here, night there, but can they be consistent week in, week out, year in, year out, mm-hmm. right? Can they keep getting better? That's the next question for those guys. So it's the same thing tonight. Vegas is playing for the number one seed in the West. They're playing to make sure they hold off the Oilers for a division championship. So they have motivation. They played last night, so they're probably going to be a little weary. So it'll be the same thing. If they sleepwalk against the Predators, what John Hines has to hope for is that his team can scrap their way and be in it and have a chance to win. That would be what your goal is for tonight. What I like about John Hines, it's very much like Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. Does not use the injuries, the trades as an excuse, right? He mentions it. He's aware of it. But he says, look, we're still trying to find formulas to win games. Mike Vrabel never used the injury rash as an excuse. But it's obvious, right? When you don't have Roman Josi and you don't have Philip Forsberg, your four highest paid players are not in there. Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson. It takes its toll over time. But you're still trying to fight and claw and scratch. I admire that.
And you bring up, I think, the most important part of all of this. Because the 1.5% chance to make the playoffs, combined with the injuries that have been plaguing the Predators over the past couple of months that don't seem incredibly optimistic from now until the end of the season, combined with the gauntlet of a schedule, to me, the evaluation of this Predators team or the direction of this Predators team has less to do with what they do from now until the end of the season and the hopes to make the playoffs, but more so, has Barry Trotz seen enough from John Hines from the trade deadline until now or until the end of the season to bring John Hines back next year? I think that's the most important thing. You all heard me a couple months ago. I was saying, get John Hines out of here. They're not winning enough games. They don't look like a team that's going to be competitive in the playoffs. But I have to give major props to John Hines for how he's been able to keep this team alive from the trade deadline until now. When they hired Barry Trotz to be the general manager of the future, I thought, he's gone. You know, John Hines, Barry Trotz is going to want to bring in his own guy. You know, they're going to move on with the new coach. But what John Hines has done has been really impressive. So I wonder if Barry Trotz feels the same way. And if Barry wants to bring in his own guy next year regardless, I don't blame him. But I do think it's a very intriguing thing to watch moving forward. Has John Hines shown Barry Trotz enough to give himself another year?
I think he has shown that he has the ability to rally young players around one common theme, and that's to win ball games. Regardless of where we sit in the standings, we're going to go out there and we're going to play hard, we're going to play fast, we're going to play physical. We're going to play the type of hockey that wins you know, games. We may not win every game, but that's the way we're going to play. So I think he's earned the right to possibly finish out the contract. And, you know, he's earned the right to be in consideration moving forward on, you know, being this team's head coach beyond his last year. Now, a lot of it has to do with, obviously, you know, what they do in the offseason, how they come back off after the offseason. Because I look at it from this standpoint. As good as this young team has played, minus the injuries, I mean, with the injuries and everything else, I think the expectations, and I mentioned this to you on text, Willie, I think the expectations, they got to be ready for the expectations to be high headed into next season, because people are always going to go back to, look at what they did without their top guns. Look at what they did. Look what they were able to do. Yes, they didn't get in the playoffs, but this team didn't take an about face and go the opposite way. They continued to fight. So if we saw this in them after March, you know, the day after March 4th, then moving forward, we should see even better things, because now they have the experience of being, you know, in the NHL. So there shouldn't be any excuses on, well, we got to wait till this young guy develops. No, he has time to develop, because now he's been, you know, he's played against the top line guys.
I'm curious, with the draft here, there'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a party downtown. There'll be a lot of people from around the league. Predators have 13 picks in the draft. Of course, none of those guys are going to help next year's team, right? But there's going to be a lot of hype and a lot of fun in the offseason. They cleared cap space. They can do some things. I'm curious where the expectation level will be at the end of the offseason, right? Where do people see them in the grand scheme of things? Because that will, you know, I think, play into where you want to go down the road with John Hines, et cetera. John Hines, I think, has 1 year left on his contract.
Yeah.
And I agree with you 100%. David Poyle was asked that this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. He gave him a very good evaluation. But it really is about Barry Trotz, who has been sort of embedded with the team. Mm-hmm. He's been with the team on the road. He's been with the coaches in the meetings. He's observed everything. He's really done an evaluation. Just from where I sit, I do think John Hines and his staff have done a very admirable job putting a winning game plan together each night, giving them the best chance to win each night, given a lot of hardship with the injuries.
Well, let's continue the conversation on the other side, because I think there's a few questions that we need to ask ourselves about John Hines, Barry Trotz, and the future of this Nashville Predators team. We'll get into that coming up next, and of course, your thoughts as well. Have you seen enough from John Hines over the last month or so since the trade deadline for John Hines to come back and be the Nashville Predators head coach next year? Your thoughts coming up next, 615-737-1025. Caroline Whitley, D-Mason, hey, join 1025 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Souls for Souls on June 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities to support a great cause and have loads of fun doing it. Plus, you'll have the chance to win awesome prizes. So sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. 1025, 1063 The Game.
In terms of John Hines here, not just this season, but especially since the training deadline, how would you evaluate, you know, the job he's done with this team?
I think excellent. This year in the whole, like right in this, during this interview, we're just talking about the basically from the trading deadline on and all the younger players. This year has not been a good year. And, you know, we can talk about the team and we can talk about individuals and we can talk about living up to expectations. And I think, you know, we all fall short in that area, whether we correctly set the expectations or not. That's my job. I felt that based on last year that we should be better, especially with the addition of Niederreiter and McDonough, but that was not the case. And I think the coaches have done a really good job, you know, handling all of the situations, especially I say ups and downs, but you know, maybe a lot more downs. We've had a lot of players that, you know, again, had career years a year ago that haven't played anywhere near that this year. So that's why we went into made all the trades and, you know, where we are. But I think the coaches have handled it well. I think they're right now the thing that stands out to me the most is the improvement of our younger players and the development of our younger players. That's certainly, I should give some kudos to Carl Taylor and the staff down in Milwaukee for that. But I also think our coaches are doing a great job of putting these guys in positions where they can succeed. So,
there you go. That was Preds General Manager David Poyle on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. His evaluation of John Hines. Now, I think as we close out the regular season, an important question to ask is John Hines going to be the head coach of this hockey team next year? And I think there's a couple questions that we need to ask ourselves, because this is a topic of conversation because of how the Preds have been able to stay in the dance since the trade deadline. But the first question is, with what mindset did Barry Trotz come into Nashville? Did he come in saying, okay, I've seen enough from John Hines, I'm ready to move on from John Hines, and nothing is going to change my mind. I already know who I want to be my coach of the future, and it's not John Hines. Because there's nobody that's more plugged into the hockey coaching world than Barry Trotz is. So how did he approach this job? How is he coming into this general manager position thinking? Is he going into it where, did he come into it with a completely open mind? Did he come into it thinking or saying, you all show me what I should do, what my first moves should be as general manager? Or was his mind already made up? I think to be able to get this job, I think you have to have a general direction of what you want to do with the team. I think you have to have some of these decisions already made up to prove to the powers that be, the people who are bringing him in as general manager, that, look, I got a plan and I'm ready to take this position on head first. But there has to be an element of a little bit of open-mindedness. So that's my question 1A. What was Barry Trotz's mindset coming into this new general manager role? And I don't really answer that question. But
I think it has to be just like any other GM, whether it's Rand Carthon or Barry Trotz. You come in, one, with an open mind, but with an open mind of change and how much change is it going to be. And as you start to assess, you know, your roster, you can figure things out. I think the good part about it for Barry Trotz is he's able to sit and watch his team as they're in season. So he's able to get a better understanding of where I think this team's strengths are and where I think their weaknesses are as far as, you know, players. Rand Carthon, he didn't have that. The season was over with. It was done. So he had to go back and watch film.
Yeah.
Like, now I got to watch film and evaluate these guys. Well, Barry is there. He's in the building. He's going on trips with him. He's in the meeting rooms with him. So not only does he get to evaluate the players, he gets to evaluate the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Like, right now as games are being played. So I think that's an advantage for Barry Trotz in a sense.
And, you know, Barry Trotz was asked at the opening press conference about John Hines, and he said, look, from afar, I see a well-coached team. But now I get a chance to be here every day. Now I can really evaluate. Those were his words, and so many, you know, that's the gist of what he said.
Much shorter than what he said, probably.
Yeah, yeah. and since then, you've seen him actually do evaluation, right? And John Hines has said, look, come on in. You're a Stanley Cup winning coach. You coach here for a long time. You know what you're doing. We want your input. You know, we'll show you what we're doing. If you have thoughts, tell us. I think that's been a really smart move by John Hines, is to say, look, I'm an open book here. I want to see what you think. I want you to get a true evaluation. Mm-hmm. And since then, I think it's fair to say the team has overachieved based on everything that has happened. Like, what I would have loved to have seen, what would we be talking about in these couple weeks if they just had Yossi and just pick another guy, if Forsberg had come back? But you have all of these guys out. You know, injuries are going to happen. Mm-hmm. But like last night, Dallas has one guy that they would otherwise be playing that wasn't in there last night. St. Louis on Saturday, no injuries at all. So it's really hit or miss when the injuries hit you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really unfortunate that on top of the four guys that you traded, which is going to affect your depth, now you have eight regular players that are out of the lineup as well. So you talk about digging down deep to Milwaukee to bring up anybody you can. They are down to the last guy, right? So you have to factor that in if you're Barry Trotz. But, look, I can see if you're saying, look, I want to put my stamp on it. I want to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand that viewpoint too. But I think John Hines has done everything he could to this point to say, look, he's made his case that he should get a chance to start the final year of his contract and say he's the coach of the team. But once again, there's a lot that has to happen.
Yeah.
Right? There's a whole off season of what moves they're going to make, who they're going to bring in, you know, how are they going to use the draft capital? They're going to make a big trade some of those draft picks to get a guy that could help them right away. That could raise your expectations. They cleared off a lot of cap space that I think a lot of people who were skeptics didn't think they'd be able to clear out. But because they did, they've got some maneuverability here. Even though the cap isn't going up, a lot of teams are going to be strapped up against that cap ceiling, and there might be players that are available without having to give up much. So there's a lot that will be happening over the offseason.
And I think the other question I have is, from Barry Trotz's point of view, to whom or to what does he maybe look at being the reason why this team before the trade deadline underachieved? And to who or to what is he giving credit to overachieving post-trade deadline? Because Barry Trotz could look at it and say, look, Carl Taylor did a lot of the dirty work, and then John Hines' job was easy because these guys were fully developed. And I don't know if that's the case or not, but I think that's it's a possibility.
Yeah, Carl Taylor's done an outstanding job
at
Milwaukee. There's no two ways about it. He's done an excellent job.
Right, so how does Barry Trotz view it? Does he say, yeah, this team absolutely has overachieved since the trade deadline with these guys that nobody else in the league has even heard of? So am I going to give more credit to Carl Taylor and therefore, you know, I feel a little bit more confident moving on from John Hines? That's what I don't know. But there is a sentiment going around, and this, we'll go to your phones, phonelines@maywilsoncountyhyundai.com. I've heard this before. This texture says, Carl Taylor is the one responsible for having these young guys ready to play, and it's past time he have his opportunity to coach in the NHL. If we don't recognize that, we will lose him to another team. All respect in the world to Carl Taylor. But I don't think that Barry Trotz can make a decision to, let's say, name Carl Taylor as the head coach of the Nashville Predators just so he doesn't lose him. I don't think you can approach it that way. You have to do what you think is best. You can't just take preventative measures because you're so afraid that he's going to go elsewhere. Carl Taylor, to your point, Willie, he's a heck of a coach. He's going to get an opportunity in the NHL, whether it's in Nashville or not.
The good thing about this situation, first of all, John Hines was that guy once upon a time. He was the coach at Scranton Wilkes-Barre, you know, under Mike Sullivan for the Penguins. That's how he got the job to be the head coach of the Devils. Right? This happens in the coaching. Barry Trotz was that guy. He was an unknown guy coaching in the AHL. And David Poile said, I like that guy. I'm going to give him a shot here with Nashville. So Barry Trotz has been there. He knows what it's like to coach the AHL team. He knows what it's like to coach an NHL team that is sort of, you know, up against it. Right? Barry Trotz, he learned through all those early years how to try to claw and scratch when you don't have the best cards in the deck, right? You don't have the upper hand. You know, you don't have aces and kings in your hand. You got fours and sixes and maybe a jack in there. You're trying to make it work. So I think that's all part of the evaluation process. And we'll see what he thinks at the end of the season. But I do think John Hines has done a fantastic job, really, weathering the storm. But we'll see, you know, what that means as Barry Trotz does his own evaluation.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The college basketball season came to a conclusion last night. Congratulations to UConn, national champions. But if you thought that maybe basketball was broken this year, Willie has the answer. Three things that Willie thinks can fix college basketball. That is coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 1025-1063, The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.